first my hands. I forget the order from time to time. I have to look up whatever. It was like, goes from my hands to my ears to my mouth to my feet. And it felt like this vibrations. I don't know how else to accept. Like extremely high frequency. Like, you know, it was really weird. It was bizarre. But the effects of it on my life, I cannot ignore. That my understanding was revolutionized overnight. My understanding was revolutionized overnight. Drugs and alcohol were never a problem again. Never had a problem with that ever, ever again. The way I thought about so many things changed. And it's been with me to this day. And so that was the third thing. There was first the scriptures, then the visible evidence that was love. And there is visible evidence. It's not absolute. It can't, and I tell you, I still had doubts with both those things. There's no like proofs. Even with the Spirit of God, at times I've still had doubts. Is God really still with me? But you know what? That kernel of faith always remains that I'm able to hold on. And I've always been able to kind of hold on, in spite of having great doubts at times. And I remember, you know, looking up at the sky and thinking maybe it all is just an accident, like they say. But God was gracious to me. And He has been gracious to me, and He's granted me faith. And I pray the same for all others who hear my voice. The reason I bring that all about is because the Shroud of Turin, I think, is evidence that Jesus Christ existed as a man. And it puts to the lie all those who try to deny His existence. It doesn't prove miracles. It doesn't prove the resurrection. Not scientifically, it doesn't. Though it surely says something when you look at it. If you look at it believing this is Jesus Christ. Okay, we have established, all right, this is the historical Jesus. This cloth is from that century. We have these prophecies. We have this New Testament Gospels evidence. And we put all that together and you look at it and you think, that proves the resurrection. You think that. It's undeniable that the human mind considers it, even for a second, and even the most skeptical man, in the back of your conscience, you know, for a slim little sliver of a thought, you think, well, maybe, no, because the doubt is so much stronger. But for those who have faith, it goes the other direction, you know? And it's perfectly acceptable. Everything doesn't have to be totally proved. That's the funny thing. Because God hasn't given it to us like that, has He? I mean, there's nothing absolute, and there's something to be said for believing in that which is not seen. That's how God has ordained that we should go through this blindly. I mean, relatively blind. It's not total blindness, but it's like we still can't see clearly where we're going, what we're going to be, what we're doing, who we're serving. I mean, we see these words, but how do we really know the guy? God, Jesus. To truly know Him is to become like Him. You know, because he that sins has not seen Him, neither known Him. You can look at the shroud all day, but if we have sin in our lives, we don't know Him. We haven't known Him. I haven't known Him. But I'm going to know Him. Because he that is born of God does not sin. Because God's seed remains in him, and he cannot sin. The seed of God remains in me, and it will grow. And it is growing. And it is taking over everything. The roots are running deep into the soil of my mind, so that nothing will cause the plant above to be blasted by heat or by snow or rain. I give that account of myself that you might see that there are reasons people believe. Look, we want our experiences to mirror the experiences of the apostles. We need to have something in us whereby we can look and have our faith built up. In us. We need to see things in us. We need to see ourselves receiving the Holy Spirit. We need to see ourselves being built up in righteousness, because that gives us the confidence to know that God is with us, that we make our calling and election sure. Prophecies of the Old Testament testify of Christ. And the objects left behind, the words, you know, they show us that He was real. Because even in the most darkest mind of an unbeliever, there's a sliver that thought, maybe. It could be. But then they say, nah, because God has not given it to them. You're saved by grace through faith, and that not of yourself, it is the gift of God. God isn't gracious to you. You cannot have faith. And Pilate, though he marvels, he does not consider. You know, if they all knew what Jesus was up to here, none of them would do it. The princes of this world, the people in charge, would not do what they were doing if they knew what was really going on. If they knew that this is what Christ intended that he should do. If they knew that this was his mind to do this. Instead, they think they're stopping him from doing something they're afraid of. Let's read on. Verse 15. Now at that feast, the governor was wont to release to the people a prisoner, whom they would. And they had then a notable prisoner called Barabbas. Therefore, when they were gathered together, Pilate said to them, Whom will ye that I release unto you? Barabbas or Jesus, which is called Christ? He was trying to set up a situation whereby the choice was easy. This despicable character, Barabbas or Jesus, which is called Christ. They thought, hey, they're going to want their guy, their prophet. They're going to release this harmless preacher. And he figured it was pretty much harmless, no worse than any of them. For he knew that for envy they had delivered. He knew they were delivering him because, hey, they're envious. You know, the people were all listening to him. They were afraid. You know, this is his cynical, worldly view of the things. You know, they're envious. They're jealous. From their perspective, it's a little different. And I don't mean that there is no envy, but just that they saw themselves in a different light. When he was set down in the judgment seat, his wife sent unto him, saying, Have thou nothing to do with that just man? For I have suffered many things this day in a dream because of him. But the chief priests and the elders persuaded the multitudes that they should ask Barabbas and destroy Jesus. The governor answered and said unto them, Whether of the twain will ye that I release to you? They say, Barabbas. Pilate saith unto them, What shall I do then with Jesus, which is called Christ? They all say unto him, Let him be crucified. The governor said, But what evil hath he done? But they cried out the more, saying, Let him be crucified. When Pilate saw that he could prevail nothing, but that rather a tumult was made, he took water and washed his hands before the multitude, saying, I am innocent of the blood of this just person. See ye to it. Then answered all the people and said, His blood be on us and on our children. That's a controversial verse. A lot of people think it inspires anti-Semitism, and I won't deny that it has. And a lot of myths have sprung up against the Jews which are not true. But the thing is, this is right. This is what they said. Why did they say it? They believed he was a blasphemer. The people who sit in Moses' seat are telling them, you gotta ask he be crucified. He's been blaspheming. We held a trial in the Sanhedrin. We held a trial with the elders, and he is found guilty in our eyes.